That's Josh's flag and his medals and all of the...
All of the years of love.
Yeah, all of the years of love.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Memorial Day weekend, our Tampa Bay. I'm John Sipes. For the next half hour, a father remembers his fallen son.
My name is Chris Hager, originally from Colorado, long time in Sarasota.
But you were in business here.
Yes.
We're not here to talk about your business, but we need to note to bring people up to speed real quick. What happened?
At about 2 o'clock on February 23rd, my cell phone rang, and it had my daughter-in-law Heather's name on it. And I was on the phone with my brother in Oklahoma City as it happened. I said, excuse me, I got to go. Heather's calling me. And I said, hi, Heather, how are you? And I didn't hear anything. And I went, oh, my God. And she said, we lost him. And she said, I can't talk anymore. And I said, it's okay. And I knew my son had been killed in Iraq in that instant. Thank you, each person here, for sharing this most difficult time. Sergeant Joshua Hager, father, husband, son, brother, grandson, friend, teacher, student. Josh was each of these and more, and we could spend hours reliving the personal moments with each other, but not today. Josh is a Ranger. I believe a great Ranger. From his first days of boot camp to Ghost Platoon, Josh was clear about his job: keep his boys safe. Josh will in this moment be looking out for his boys. That was his mission. For those of you here that are not familiar in a deep way with what it means to be Ranger, seek out these brave men who are here. Find them in the next hour and ask them. Our country needs now more than ever the courage, the soul that a Ranger has. As a Ranger says, as my son said, here I am, send me. Joshua leads the way.
He received a particular honor from his fellow troops, those they would most be willing to follow into battle.
Josh went to basic training in 1998, and there is an award called the Audie Murphy Award. It is interesting that that award was initiated by a gentleman who had been one of Audie Murphy's platoon mates in World War II. That gentleman in 1980-something, 82, 84, went through basic training again at 64 years old and said, I want to commemorate new soldiers into the Army with some fashion. And he created the Audie Murphy Award, and it was voted by the graduates of basic training and awarded to that soldier they'd be most willing to follow into battle. And that was the first award my son was given from the Army.
He loved his work.
He loved his work, and he saw his work as very straightforward. It was to keep his boys safe. Josh was a platoon sergeant. His job was not necessarily to do the mission, but to enable his boys to do the mission and bring them back safely. That was his job, and he loved that and was excellent at it.
Reconstructing, and I know this is hard, and I apologize sincerely, but we want to tell this story. What happened on that day that he lost his life?
I'll start in October. Josh volunteered. It was actually Zero Dark 30. Josh was the platoon sergeant for Ghost Platoon in Anbar Province, Ramadi. And this was the scout platoon, which meant that every time a combat mission was being prepared, my son and his fellow members of the scout platoon went out with the command, generally Lieutenant Colonel Ferry, and scouted the mission first and then made all of the discernments or assessments for the real mission. Josh was on over 70 combat missions in 90 days. They got ready. Josh was responsible to make sure every vehicle was prepared, every soldier was prepared. He had yes or no, up or down on the colonel, on anybody in the squad. He was the one in charge of the mission. Three Humvees went out. They were about halfway to their objective, and they hit a camouflaged, pressure-sensitive, Iranian-made, improvised explosive device. If you can think of a 16-inch square pizza box made out of hardened steel, painted to look like sand, covered up and buried, and it didn't have to be remotely triggered, so it was in the middle of nowhere, and they hit it. Colonel Ferry was in the third vehicle. Josh was in the second. Somehow the first Humvee missed it. The second one hit it. Josh was killed instantly, lost his arm and his leg. The colonel pulled him from the wreckage. And when the alert went out that another, that they had been hit, another platoon, dog squad, saddled up and started coming to list aid. And one of their Humvees hit the second buried IED, and two fine young men also lost their lives. Specialist Buford, Specialist Walters, the medic and the driver for the medic.
This is the kind of story that you, I know, have been able to tell before. Rather than my asking questions, you just take this conversation wherever you want it to go.
The week before Josh was killed, I called him. Or he called me, actually, because that's the way it worked. And his normal line was, "Dad, I just called to tell you I love you." Son was 29, and for 29 years, he would call up, say, "How you doing? I just wanted to know, wanted you to know I love you." And we talked about family and business and all those things, and nothing about what he was doing. And at the end, I said, "Well, how is it?" And he said, "Dad, I'll stay here 6 years so Bailey doesn't have to come out and fight in this sandbox." He said, "This is the most... these people live in the most awful conditions, and we're making a difference." Josh absolutely revered his responsibility to prepare and to take care of those soldiers that he trained, that he worked with, worked for. He had nicknames when we were at his service. One of the commanders wrote, "It's not unusual for a soldier to have a nickname. It is very unusual for a soldier to have many nicknames." One of them was Task Force. The Hagermeister, Hagerman. I mean, it goes on and on. But he provided not only the professionalism, but the humor, the lightness, and the seriousness of what he did. He will be so mad that he was killed, not because he lost his life, but that he can't be there to protect his fellow boys. When I got back from services, when I got back, I said, "I got to make some phone calls." And I called both of Florida senators, Mel Martinez, Bill Nelson. They were very kind. They called me back. Local Congressman Buchanan called me back. We met with them. People showed respect, appreciation, and my message was real simple. Do not waste my son's life. How do I look at my 9-year-old grandson and say your father's life was wasted because our politicians are too cowardly to let them finish the job?
Afternoon, everybody. Thank you for coming.
Sergeant Kevin Devine.
There are many things I could say about Josh. There are many things that we all could say about Josh. Josh left an impression on the people that he came across. Let me just give you a snapshot of who he was and the mark that he left. This is what his family and friends have to say. He's the man with more energy than he knew what to do with. Paced around the CP about how great it was to be in the Army after having way too much coffee. It always amazed me of how he made the best out of a bad situation with his ability to make us laugh. Someone also said, "I've never met someone so dedicated in caring for soldiers. His undying commitment to his family, friends, and the Army will always be remembered. His humble nature and warm personality endeared him to our hearts. Unbelievable heart, if you only knew. It was an honor to serve with Josh, and it was more of an honor to be his friend." And last but not least, someone also said, you are my hero. From these few words, you can do the math yourself. You add it all up, and it equals Josh. Josh approached life with unbridled aggressiveness and humor. He stood by the Ranger Creed, which he lived by. He loved the Army. He loved his friends, and he loved his family. His family here, and his brothers to his left and right. So from all your friends and family, Josh, we miss you. Rangers lead the way, and we'll see you on high ground.
Josh was making a difference, and I have email after email from his colonel, from the captain. There's a one people can see called Real Time, Ramadi in Real Time. These guys were winning the war in Iraq because of people like my son. I've got a picture of Josh with his arm around a 9-year-old little boy, an Iraqi whose dad is a sheik, and they now want to, please help us win this. Help us have lives. Josh was there not for great, grandiose political reasons, but to help people that had a 9-year-old little boy like his son and stop being butchered and killed by people that don't care.
You told me on the telephone a story about the colonel.
Lieutenant Colonel Ferry is quite a gentleman. His wife and I shared an emotional moment in Colorado at the services. Colonel Ferry has written me several times, one a private communication between he and I, and one that has been published to Senator Martinez. But portions of the private letter that I would offer. There was a commemorative service at Camp Corregidor for 5 soldiers, one of whom was my son. There were 1,300 Marines, Army, Iraqi military. And Colonel Ferry said, I couldn't tell them how much I missed your son because it would have seemed like I had favorites. But by God, I had a favorite. He was the finest NCO I'd ever served with. He tells a story of coming under fire with my son. Josh pushes the colonel down behind a wall, protects him with his own body, directs fire from his other platoon mates, and orchestrates their safe movement. Josh was so selfless, he didn't even think about it. My son and the colonel delivered a new Dodge truck to one of the sheikhs. Doesn't sound like much, except they realized when they dropped the truck off, they had about a 2-mile walk through Ramadi by themselves back to their base and went, oh, this might be a problem. And they started telling jokes, and the colonel wrote, he said, you know, I watched your son, and as he was laughing and trying to make light of it, I could see his eyes move, his weapon move. He was protecting me with 100% of his awareness and his professionalism as a soldier. And he was still telling jokes as they walked along the streets. That is a level of courage, of bravery, that I wish the leaders in Congress could even pretend to demonstrate to the American public. I remember seeing, and forgive me for bringing it up specifically, John Kerry threw his medals away and then said, oh gee, I only pretended to throw mine, they were somebody else's medals. Excuse me, if you would do that, you have no right to even touch someone's medals. My son's Purple Heart, his Bronze Star, I hold in reverence as every other soldier's. Do not look at me and say you care about American soldiers when you would pretend to throw someone's away. What disrespect is that?
Sergeant Boomer Baumgart.
Surrender is not a Ranger word. I will never leave a fallen comrade to fall into the hands of the enemy, and under no circumstances will I ever embarrass my country. Rarely will I display the intestinal fortitude required to fight on to the Ranger objective and complete the mission, though I be the lone survivor. Rangers lead the way.
Thank you.
they like to characterize Vietnam as the only war America ever lost. And that is a lie.
We did not lose a single military engagement in the totality of Vietnam.
The American military, they won that war. It was the American Congress that gave it to the communists when they cut off the bullets for the South Vietnamese Army. And we're looking at the same thing.
Who claims credit for that turnaround in Congress? Walter Cronkite. He claims credit for having ended a war that we had won. And I look and listen to the news people, they're taking credit for having lost. There was a vote in Congress, last week or week before last, that the Democrats cheered that we were losing in Iraq? How do you cheer that? Why is that beneficial? Well, it's beneficial if, as Senator Reid says, you pick up 4 Senate seats. What an abysmal way to have to run a political life. What a crime.
As in the case of Vietnam, 3.5 to 5 million people were slaughtered. And if the Congress is successful again in delivering a defeat to us and a victory to our enemy, that 3.5 to 5 million number will be palled by the bloodbath that will occur in the Middle East.
Why did Osama bin Laden use airplanes instead of a dirty nuclear bomb? And the answer is because he could. Why do they not attack military bases? Because they can't. In other words, the choice of weapons and targets for the Islamic fascists is not one of moral choice or military expediency. It's what they can or can't do. And we prevent them from doing the most heinous things. They do not stop those actions out of a moral sense. We had an occasion called Black Hawk Down, Somalia. They didn't show the accuracy of the fight in Somalia. The Muslims, the warlords' fighters, would take a woman, throw her on the ground, spread her legs, put a 50 caliber machine gun between them, and tie an infant on their backs and start firing at American soldiers. Who does that? Soldiers? People with whom you can negotiate? No. That's the Al-Qaeda in Iraq mindset. We will throw a woman on the ground, protect our position, and strap small children to our backs, and somehow Harry Reid thinks we should negotiate with that? The producers of TV movies didn't show that, but that's how the Somalis attacked Black Hawk Down. They understand that we can defeat them militarily. Let the politicians get out of the road, and let my son's comrades do that job. Rangers have 2 codes. One is a biblical imperative. It says, "Who will stand for me?" The second verse is, "Here I am, send me." My son said, "Here I am, send me." Rangers lead the way. Oh, if we had half of the integrity that an Army Ranger shows in anyone in Congress. In the month of May, there will be a stone added to the Ranger Memorial at Fort Benning, Georgia. My son's name will be on it because he was a hero worth honoring.
Staff Sergeant Joshua R. Hager, 29 years old, serving in Operation Iraqi Freedom with the 1st Battalion, 9th Infantry Regiment, 2nd Brigade Combat Team, 2nd Infantry Division, Fort Carson, Colorado, was killed in action on February the 23rd, 2007.
You're in the process of moving to Colorado. You've rented a house next door to your son's widow.
24 months ago, Heather was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. She had a tumor diagnosed in her leg. 3 years ago, I lost my wife to a 20-year battle with breast cancer. Heather's done all the treatment she can do. She's in remission, but she does not have a life without pain. She has one and never complains. My son made the choice, and Heather knew that she could have kept him from serving and wouldn't think about it. We're going back. Heather, you know, you look and you write a movie script. 2 weeks before my son was killed, Heather was at a neighbor's house and was attacked by all things a pit bull. 3 weeks ago now, she fell and broke her right arm. So she actually can't use either arm. My grandson in third grade is having difficulties. They need us. I need to be there. So we're going to go back.
Going back to Colorado. And I can just say to you, good sir, God bless you and God bless your son, your daughter-in-law, and all in your family, your circle of affection.
The last thing, and think about this if you can, and put a picture, if I may try to paint a word picture. They bring the caskets back with an escort. I have a younger son, Aaron, who's an officer in the Coast Guard. He was allowed to be the escort of my son when the plane landed in Colorado Springs, bitter cold, 10:30 at night. Both my sons came out with a plane, one standing as a proud officer and the other underneath a flag. When they were presented at the service, there were 400 or 500 people at the chapel in Fort Carson. The governor of Colorado was there, and I appreciated that. Standing room only. And towards the end of the service, at the casket stood my 85-year-old dad. He was 82nd Airborne, World War II. Was able to pin my son's Ranger tab on him when he graduated from Ranger school. And he stood with a hand on the flag on the coffin, and he sang Johnny Cash's song, This Ragged Old Flag.
I walked through a county courthouse square. On a park bench, an old man was sitting there. I said, your old courthouse is kind of run down. He said, no, it'll do for our little town. I said, your old flagpole has leaned a little bit, and that's a ragged old flag you got hanging on it. He said, have a seat. And I sat down. Is this the first time you've been to our little town? I said, I think it is. He said, I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag. You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took it across the Delaware. And it got powder burned the night that Francis Scott Key sat watching it write and say, can you see? And it got a bad rip in New Orleans with Pakenham and Jackson tugging at its seams. And it almost fell at the Alamo beside the Texas flag, but she waved on, though. She got cut with a sword at Chancellorsville, and she got cut again at Shiloh Hill. There was Robert E. Lee, Beauregard, and Bragg, and the south wind blew hard on that ragged old flag. On Flanders Field in World War I, she got a big hole from a Bertha gun. She turned blood red in World War II. She hung limp and low a time or two. She was in Korea, Vietnam. She went where she was sent by her Uncle Sam. She waved from our ships upon the briny foam, and now they've about quit waving back here at home. In her own good land here, she's been abused. She's been burned, dishonored, denied, and refused. And the government for which she stands is scandalized throughout the land. And she's getting threadbare and she's wearing thin, but she's in good shape for the shape she's in. Cause she's been through the fire before. And I believe she can take a whole lot more. So we raise her up every morning. We take her down every night. We don't let her touch the ground, and we fold her upright. On second thought, I do like to brag, cause I'm mighty proud of that ragged old flag.
We do have a ragged old flag. It's got a hole or two in it. It's been torn and burned a bit. By God, it carries the pride and the honor and the respect of every member of our armed forces. What gets me through these dark, incredible times is that I see in the eyes of you, John, the respect and the honor, the tributes on the internet, the emails, the unsolicited remarks from folks I've never met said, bless you, thank you. It is those moments of pure joy because every soldier, but my son also, touched lives that I never knew. And in some small fashion, I had a part in his life. I've done okay. Make sure our elected officials do their part and don't waste anyone's life.
You ask for nothing. You ask nothing for yourself. But you do ask those who are listening to us to visit a website.
Operation Homefront, excellent, kind bunch of people, provided some financial assistance that I've needed. Homefront Cares, another organization that helped with airplane tickets for family members to make it to funeral services. TAPS, an incredible resource founded by the wife of a major who was lost his life in the early 80s. There are such great organizations, tributes, people that need and ask for support and do it selflessly. If I have time for two more quick stories.
Do it.
My sister-in-law is flight attendant for United. They have MAC flights. MAC flights are the military flights that chartered to take people. Flight attendants volunteer for those flights. A flight attendant went out late at night one night and dug up a piece of sod, put it in a plastic bag, took it in her suitcase. They flew to Kuwait, then brought back a group of Marines. Knowing when the captain said, "We've now crossed into American airspace," flight attendant pulls a piece of sod out and shows it to the Marines, and they kissed it. There are kind people that sit at Bangor, Maine Airport with cell phones so that any soldier, any time of day or night, can make a free phone call as long as they are on the ground at Bangor, Maine. Why didn't the news say something about those people? Patriot Guard stands guard and protects families like mine from the intrusion of the insensitive and the insulting folks. I asked some people from Code Pink if they knew anybody that had been in Iraq. They told me to screw off, to go to hell, because I was proud of my son. All you have to do is look at the real people and ask real questions, see where hearts are.
Staff Sergeant Hager is survived by his wife Heather and their son Bailey. He is also survived by his mother, Lois Knight, of Broomfield, Colorado, his father, Chris Hager, of Sarasota, Florida, and his stepbrother, Ensign Aaron Joseph, United States Coast Guard, serving in Miami, Florida.
The sacrifice that every family has made who's lost someone, who has a wounded soldier, it is membership to a club that none of us would ever ask for. Forgive me for being somewhat, I don't know how you'd characterize it, but if I'm better able to handle it, some other one, another parent, then I'm okay with taking that on. But in the nature of this conflict, this is a clash of civilizations, and we still have only lost 3,500 soldiers. That's a small number. Let us do this work. And understand it would have been the most incredibly successful military campaign. It bothers me greatly when people act as if we have lost 300,000 lives. We haven't.
His name is Chris Hager, and your son's name one more time.
Staff Sergeant Joshua Ryan Hager.
God bless you, my friend.
Thank you. He blesses us every day.
When you see a man or woman in uniform this weekend, walk up to them and say, "Thank you for your sacrifice." That's our Tampa Bay. I'm John Cypress. We'll see you next week.